I open the House Committee on Human Services on today, Monday, March 30th, 2009, and I'm going to open up a work session on House Bill 2442, and
carry it over to Wednesday.
Until Wednesday, and close the work session on 2442, open up a public hearing on 2987 and 2988.
HCR 8.
Thank you.
Okay, then.
Senator Kotek, it's good to see you here.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Good morning, committee members, on this bright Monday. Tina Kotek, State Representative, House District 44, North and Northeast Portland, here today to talk about three bills related to child care. And I have the pleasure of being the House member on the Oregon Commission for Child Care, which is a governor-appointed group that looks at our early childhood care and education system here in the state. And just since I have a few moments, and I hope folks are watching on TV, as I mentioned on the floor the other day, the annual biannual report to the governor on our child care system is out, and there is now an executive summary as well. This is called A Precarious Time, Oregon's Child Care and Early Education System Faces a Down Economy, and it's the report to the governor and the legislature, and they have executive summaries available now too, so we'll make sure those get out to folks. But I urge you to read it. It's a good primer as well, as I know you've been doing with other child care issues.
Okay, everybody, I forgot to mention, please turn off all your cell phones, blueberries, blackberries, and you have need to turn them completely off, not just on mute, because it affects the sound system. Thank you.
This committee deals with a variety of early childhood issues. I know you've been dealing with some other bills, so it's a really a great resource, so I urge you to take a look at it. The three bills we have before you today are related to the work of the commission. The first one is House Bill 2987, and there are amendments coming around, a -1 amendment for this bill, as well as 2988. I know some of the folks testifying will speak to. 2987, this comes out of a lot of work done during the interim by the Child Care Commission. They hosted a series of town halls around the state to look at the issue of school-age care, which I believe this came up in a previous hearing on an unrelated or a bill around child care, but not this one, talking about what are the oversight measures on our school-age programs. And so this is an attempt to capture that and ask that school-age programs provide at least a criminal background check for their volunteers who are working with children. This would create a new category of child care programs which are recorded and tracked by the Child Care Division of the Employment Department, but are not subject to inspections or the same level of regulation as other child care facilities. And I know you might have some debate about that, but what you'll see in the dash ones in particular was an attempt to move this conversation forward, but be very cognizant of the fiscal that might be attached to it, because it would we want to make sure that we're able to have greater oversight of our school-age programs, which would be defined as programs that for less than 8 hours a week teach specific activities or skills like sports, music, and art. There would be a registration fee collected by the department to help cover some of the recording and registration with this program, but you'll hear more from the Employment Department about this particular issue. House Bill 2988, also an attempt to improve oversight and make sure our children are safe in the different types of programs that serve them. As you know, many programs around the state require some kind of criminal background check when you work with children. The Employment Department came forward with a proposal to make it easier for volunteers who serve in multiple programs to be able to be listed in a new program. What we're calling our clean box registry is a place to go, say you've been cleared on a basic criminal background check, that an organization could then check so you weren't having to do multiple background checks if you volunteered in more than one agency. This also, as I mentioned, has a -1 amendment, and this had a particular, the way it came out of Legislative Council included the extensive background checks that the Employment Department now does for our child care facilities, and those include child protective services checks. That's very time-consuming and could have a huge fiscal impact if that stayed in the bill. So the amendment would just have the clean box dealing with basic LEDS criminal background checks. And again, the department will discuss that. Lastly, HCR 8. is a resolution brought on behalf of the commission members to celebrate the life of one of the commission members, Lynn England, who had been a member of the commission for many years. I actually worked with Lynn before I was elected when we were working on a tax credit bill back in, I believe, the 05 session. And Lynn was very active in her community. She owned a small business, provided child care for her employees, was just a great advocate for child care as well as other community interests in Central Oregon. She was very active in the Crook County community for many years. Lynn unfortunately passed away driving to a child care commission meeting last November. She was killed in a traffic accident, and so we wanted to memorialize her commitment to the state, and you'll hear from members of the committee as commission as well as a family member today. So with that, I'll let the real expert speak, and thank you for your time. I hope you'll be able to support all these, and I guess we'll have to come back on the dash ones, but I wanted to get them in front of you today so you could start taking a look at them.
Great. Thank you so much, Representative. Any quick questions for Representative before she goes back to her other duty? All right. Thanks again.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
So we have Beth Unger and Rosetta Wangerin. Is that right? Good morning.
Good morning, Representative Tomei and other members. My name is Rosetta Wangerin, and I'm the chair of the Oregon Commission for Child Care. And in front of you is the memo that on House Bill 2987, first one I'd like to speak to is, first of all, as you know, the Child Care Commission is a body of 18 members that are volunteers. And we are appointed by the governor, Speaker of the House, President of the Senate. In 2007, the Child Care Division requested guidance from the Commission for Child Care regarding the working definition of exempt school-age child care. And the working definition of exempt school-age care has many gray areas, and it made it very difficult for them as they were out working in the community to help work with providers and what the requirements were. After holding five of the community forums or town hall meetings that Representative Kotek just mentioned to you, we came up with the three elements that are listed in the memo in front of you. One is require employees and volunteers who have unsupervised contact with children to submit to criminal history background checks. Number two is inform the parents that they are not a licensed facility, because oftentimes parents are not able to discern that, and so we want them to have that posted. And thirdly, they would need to register by mail with the Child Care Division. Now, that is not licensing. It's just an informational piece that would go to the Child Care Division so that they knew that this facility was operating and that they would know that they were in existence. During the formation of this proposed legislation, the Commission of Child Care worked closely with partners such as the Boys and Girls Club, and Heidi McGowan is going to read today for you a letter of support that came from them. What I would like to ask of you today is to please support this bill. We believe that this is a very important change in the process in Oregon. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to ask them. Otherwise, I'll let my other two partners speak here.
I think I'll have the whole panel speak, and then we can entertain questions.
Okay, great. Thank you. I'm Heidi McGowan, the Executive Officer of the Oregon Commission for Child Care. Chair Tomei and members of the committee, I received a letter of support from Lloyd Toll, who is the Regional Services Director of the Boys and Girls Clubs of Oregon. And he pulled together a forum of directors of the Boys and Girls Clubs from all around Oregon to provide input into our process to ensure that we were serving not just their program needs, but their children and families that they serve. He provides support for 46 clubhouses serving over 85,500 youth ages 6 to 18 throughout Oregon. His note here says, I appreciate the time and energy the Commission has taken in listening to the viewpoints of private nonprofit youth development organizations to ensure that our communities have safe and positive youth development experiences that meet the needs of young people and their families. I'm also pleased that the Commission does not wish to create regulations that would impose barriers to local communities to provide constructive youth program opportunities for their area. I am in support of the following concepts. First, require employees and volunteers that have regular ongoing contact with children to submit to a criminal history check. Second, to inform parents that the organizations are not licensed with the Child Care Division. And third, to enroll by mail with the Child Care Division. And he's happy to be of further assistance. But just want to demonstrate the wide and broad span of support that we sought during this process.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm Beth Unverzad. I'm the director of a collaboration called Oregon Ask, which is Oregon After School for Kids. And we're a statewide network for after school programs. We're part of a national initiative around after school. It is becoming clearly a national issue as we look at what our new Secretary of Education, Arne Duncan, talks about. He talks about after school in a whole different way. When we have discussed with the 23 different organizations that we have at the table what after school is, we take a very sort of broad look, and we're really talking about programs that serve children and youth from kindergarten through high school. Currently in America, we have over 4 million children and youth who are participating in after-school programs. And today, Oregon families are relying even more on after-school, before-school, summer programs as they work to keep their jobs, take on more hours, or struggle to afford basic necessities for their children. In recent studies, we have learned that parents with children in high-quality after-school programs are more productive at work, less stressed on the welfare of their children, and miss fewer days of work. 44% of our children are low-income children in Oregon, and they rely on the nutritious meals and snacks that we have in after-school programs. After-school and summer learning programs enhance the academic, well-being, and social and emotional development of children and youth. They spend more time out of school than they do in school. We have just the beginning pieces of what after-school looks like in Oregon, and it is a very hodgepodge and has risen out of local need because parents do work. We have a huge percentage of our population that are working in jobs and need child care and don't have it. And when they get to school, when they get to 5 years old, it's like nobody cares. So they just assume schools are going to take care of it, and they're not. And then they hit 11, and there's no funding, both federal, state funding, for after-school programs for children and youth. So there's this huge national conversation is going on around after-school programming. We have started in the last 3 years to try to identify the kinds of programs that we have in Oregon and who's caring for children, which is part of the reason that we came to the Commission on Children's and to the Commission around this issue. We have identified over 411 programs. Most of the Oregon programs are co-located in elementary and middle schools. 34% offer programs during Christmas break, school break. The average number of hours is 12. Many are over 20. There are over at least 60 children in each program. And we compared our survey data with ODE enrollment. And enrollment is primarily groups that are particularly Hispanic, and the data shows higher percentage of minority students enrolled in these programs. We have visited over 150 programs over the last 3 years and seen a wide variety of standards from very, very low, where you can't even imagine that people would leave their children there, to some that we would consider okay. Our group has spent the last 3 years developing program standards for after school that are now in draft form and going out to our constituents to talk to them about improving the quality of after school programming. We have also seen a tremendous need for professional development in this field and have developed a first draft of core competencies, which is what is it that somebody needs to know who works with children and youth? We don't have that in Oregon, and we need it desperately. These are very small steps that we're asking you to take today. They're just basic. We need to keep children safe. We need to make sure that we know where they are and who's taking care of them. We need to make sure that they have a background check. This is the first time that I'm going to be in front of the legislature, and you can be assured that I will come back because it is a crisis out there for children and families, and we need to do something about it. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Any questions, colleagues? Representative Boone.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Some time ago we heard that it's possible that someone who is a sex offender could operate a preschool, not daycare, but a preschool if it's under so many hours a day, and I was wondering if that is covered by either of these bills that would capture that.
Sure. Chair Tomei, Representative Boone. The commission was specifically requested to address after-school programs from the Child Care Division because of the gray areas around school-age care. After we held our forums and came to this proposal, the commission had a lengthy conversation about whether or not we should include preschools in this. We did not seek input from that population, and the commission determined that we need to do our due diligence and have prioritized this for the next year to go out and hold community forums and obtain feedback from the preschool population in order to formulate a proposal before we bring anything back to the legislature.
Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Chair Tomei. In the context of the amount of people you're talking about getting background checks, you're talking about like all the coaches that help with all the after-school boys and girls programs and stuff and all those volunteers. Have you got an idea how big a number that is of people? And then kind of along with that, what is the cost of a background check?
Okay. Chair Tomei, Representative Freeman. The Boys and Girls Club have their own criminal history check process, and they currently conduct that on all people who have who have contact with children, according to what they've told me. This legislation, it does not apply to athletic programs, ballet, music programs. It's really targeted towards child care related programs and people who would have unsupervised contact with children. In terms of the cost, there are various places people can receive criminal history checks, and so there's a range. And we probably have some people here in the audience who can answer that question.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
I'm going to get to Representative Van Orman first, and I'll come back to you, Representative Hoon.
Thank you, Chair Tomei. Well, I thought I heard Representative Kotek talk about the LEDs, and I know the LEDs is primarily the inexpensive part, but then there's the FBI check if you've lived out of the state for over 3 years. So is that part? So I want to be sure I heard Representative Kotek correctly.
We can't let you speak from there.
She can replace me. That's
okay. Okay. Sure.
Great.
I can wait for the answer.
Great. Okay.
Thank you for coming. And if you'd just let us know who you are.
Sure. I'm Kitty Lake with the Child Care Division. I'm the field manager for the licensing part. Madam Chair and Representative Van Orman, let me see. I understand your question was about FBI checks and any background checks that are done through the Child Care Division do require an FBI check. The basic check is $3, but then if an FBI check is required for any reason, I think that costs an additional around $50, and then you have to get fingerprints, which can be anywhere from 10 to 20.
So. Follow-up.
Follow-up.
And then that could be a charge either to the person who's applying or to the agency that wants to hire this person. Is that correct?
They would make that decision, whether okay. they pass that on to the employee or whether they pay for that.
Okay. Thanks.
Madam Chair.
I've got another. Oh, are you following up on this one?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, I'm trying to get a handle on the $3, the NCIC check with the FBI, National Crime Information Center. What is the what was the $50 that you're talking about?
$3 is for the LEDS check. The
NCIC
is a much higher cost, yes.
Okay, and what? And the $50?
That's for the FBI check, the national check.
Follow? No, you're
I'm
okay.
Good right there. Thanks.
Okay. Representative Boone.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want some clarification on an after school program. What about the programs held in the school as an after school program, a karate class, a whatever, soccer class? Held in the school, there's some sort of assumption, I would imagine, on the part of parents that if it's held in the school, on the school grounds, and there's no travel between the school and another school, for example, the kid just goes after school. What about those programs? Those people are not checked?
Madam Chair and Representative Boone, there are really two different kinds of programs right now. There are exempt programs, programs that are not required to be licensed, and there are programs that are required to be licensed. Programs that are required to be licensed have to go by all our rules and have background checks and all of that. Right now, if you're not licensed, there's no requirement. So we're adding a requirement for programs that exist that don't need to be licensed, a requirement that they would have to do those three things, one of which is to get criminal background checks. So it would be requiring a much broader number of after-school programs to come under the requirement to have background checks.
Okay. Follow-up?
Yeah.
I guess
it looks like we have somebody else who's
if there's need a little for you, clearer.
Okay.
Of what is an exempt, what constitutes an exempt program that does not require these checkups, and how does that work? How do you decide who gets?
That's been the really tricky part of the old legislation. We have lots of programs that kind of aren't quite defined as child care needing regulation, and they've been exempt. So this legislation is an attempt to make those lines much more clear. And what we've said is that if they're operating for more than about eight hours a day, and they're
8 hours a week.
8 hours a week, right. More than 8 hours a week, then they would come into this, but they're not required to be licensed. Then they would be in this school age recorded. We would keep a record of who they were. We would require that they let parents know that they are not licensed, and we would require that they do background checks.
Follow up.
Maybe what I need is some solid examples, like a program like a music thing or something. What kind of programs are not having to be licensed or not having to have these checks?
Right now we have a variety of programs, and one that comes to mind is a karate program that really, they pick kids up after school. They do karate. They have some extended time that the kids are there, and then parents pick them up. And they do it every day after school. So they're there, you know, 10, 12 hours a week. They're in operation. But they're really saying, we're not child care. We're here to do karate. We had one program that I think is not going anymore at a skate world where kids came there. They just were kids who were gathering. And so the operator of the skate world said, these kids are always here. They need some things. They started to do some, put out some extra activities and set up a table for homework, and they began to look like child care. Had we come in and licensed them, that would have shut them down. So they're really programs that are kind of in between needing a license, but they really have kids there every day, all day. Does that make it any, does that help?
I guess.
Follow up,
thank you. I guess I'm having trouble understanding why, now you've opened another can of worms, why the licensing procedure would shut them down, and why someone who's handling children every day would not be subject to these safety checks.
Madam Chair and Representative Boone, the licensing itself has costs. Besides a background check, we have a requirement for a certain ratio, for a certain background of the teacher, for a certain numbers of snacks and these kinds of things. Some of the informal programs, if we put those requirements on them at this point, we have heard that they would just not be able to do it and would stop doing this kind of care. So it's a way to maintain some of the informal arrangements for care, but require some background checks and let parents know that this isn't a fully licensed program. We really are looking at programs. We're really drawing the line between programs that are for enrichment and programs that really parents are taking their kids there and saying, I want you to be responsible for these children every day. So if a parent sends a child from home over to the Boys and Girls Club and says, you go on over there and play basketball and have a good time, please come home at 3:30, the parent is really still monitoring the child's day. Where a parent who says, pick my child up after school, and I'm going to pick them up at 5 o'clock, and in the interim, I'm expecting that you will make sure my child is safe, is a program that we're requiring to be licensed.
Katie, I can speak.
We'll come back, Representative. It sounds like...
Great. Thank you, Chair Tomei and Representative Boone. We heard several things during the community forums that might help define a little bit of some of your questions. We heard from programs that are operating after-school programs in churches where kids are in the neighborhood, the churches open their doors, and provide a safe place for kids to be. These are often free or very low fees, $10 a year, $20 a year. This was happening all over Oregon, especially in the rural communities. And these are programs that are able to be low cost because they are not licensed and they do not provide, they do not have staff that meet certain qualifications. It's more of like an open club, where a child comes in, signs themselves in, maybe plays basketball for the afternoon, and then walks on home. It's kind of some neighborhood community programs. In some of these programs, we heard many of them were Boys and Girls Clubs, churches, and one of the reasons we came to this proposal is because it is a low-cost way to keep kids safe by ensuring that children have environments where staff or people working with them have background checks at a minimum.
Representative Maurer, then I've got Representative Van Orman, Representative Freeman, and Representative Cowan.
Right. Madam Chair, the more questions that are asked, the more confused I am.
Absolutely.
Because now I don't know what bill we're talking about. We've got several amendments. The amendments are very convoluted and complex.
Mm-hmm.
And so... I mean, I think we need to focus on what we're focusing on and not mix HCR 8 with 88 and 87. And
he is confused.
And so my question is, when we had a conversation a month ago or so about non-licensed preschools, preschools.
Right.
And I went back and talked to several preschool providers who are not licensed, less than 4 hours a day, and I said, well, this is kind of the conversation. And they wigged out on me. And so, but you mentioned that you have not talked to, quote, the community, and this does not address that preschool community. Is
correct.
That correct?
That's correct.
And so we're dealing with after-school programs,
mm-hmm,
only, and now the line is, like, it gets really, because I have absolutely no desire to shut down that church. I have no desire to shut down that skating rink who just, you know, now you want to close their business, I have no desire to do that.
Right.
And so I think we need to be very careful, but the amendment needs to be hand-engrossed, and we need to, like, something to figure out what we are.
Representative Callan has...
Yeah, I thank you for letting me get in here, because I've been sort of hand-engrossing this. As I've been listening, I was curious as to what the amendments were, and they're fairly lengthy. But I think it might be helpful if...
Go ahead.
...what I have learned. I can see where these amendments take preschools out of the bill that's in front of us. And it looks to me, and I need confirmation, which might be helpful, that the primary insertion is found on page 2 of the amendments, starting with line 2, that talks about a school-age recorded program, means a program for school-age children that's not operated by a school district, that's not required to be certified under the ORSs that are certified child care, I assume, and in which youth development activities are provided to children during hours that school is not in session and does not take the place of a parent's care. And I guess when I read that, I'm thinking of my own youth and the amount of time that I spent at the local Y, because otherwise I would have been a latchkey child. I walked from home to stop by my mother's office where I got a cookie and checked in, and then another block down to the Y where I spent the rest of the afternoon. The Y was not responsible for me. I played, I swam, I did whatever I did, and my parents were still responsible. But the fact that people there should have a background check and not necessarily go all through the rest of the licensure makes a great deal of sense to me. Is that what we're talking about here?
Chair Tomei and Representative Cowan, you have explained it very well.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Cowan.
I told you I had something to add.
I know you did. I trusted you. You did. Thank you. Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Chair Tomei, but Representative Cowan has asked my question.
Great. Representative Freeman.
Thank you, and I'll make this quick. I heard a couple different things, and I just want to get it straight. I have been a coach for the Boys and Girls Club for 3 years, sponsored many teams there, and very much enjoy working with the youth. I have never had a background check there, although I've had many other background checks. My question is specifically around the athletic programs. I heard one person say this is just for after school daycare type setting. Then I heard somebody else say if it's over a certain amount of hours. I will tell you the football program and baseball programs I've been involved in, both are over those amount of hours.
Yeah.
And I can also tell you it's almost impossible to get coaches to come help us. And if you add another layer of cost, it may have less kids to be able to be involved. And that's what I'm concerned about.
Again, sure.
Chair Tomei and Representative Freeman, we wrestled with that very hard. We drew that line specifically to try and sort out athletic programs like coaching Little League and coaching basketball and dance classes and, you know, those things that traditionally meet 2 or 3 hours a week, and not include them in the requirements to be a registered to be a recorded program and to have criminal background checks. We talked about that at length, that there may be some programs where athletics are so intense that they do that, and our thought was that those would be for kids hopefully older than 12. But we are looking to draw that line in a way that does not include those. And it's a hard line to draw. It gets to be a bit of a zigzag.
Real quick, and then I'll be done.
All of that.
Thank you. Starting in the fourth grade in Roseburg, I don't know the rest of the state, it's 2 hours a day, 5 days a week for football.
Wow.
And that doesn't include the games. That's practice.
That's Roseburg.
I'm just telling you. So through their Boys and Girls Club, every single coach, and there's 3 to 4 coaches per team. So it would be pretty costly.
Yeah.
I think you are here who would like to testify. If you could give us your name.
Chair Tomei, members of the committee, my name is Kathleen Hines, and I'm the legal and compliance manager with the Child Care Division. And I primarily came to the table in case there are additional questions about the amendments. And I do wish to clarify, too, that The way the bill is drafted is that each program would be responsible for doing their own criminal background checks, and they would decide what kind of criminal background check they would do. So there may or may not be an FBI background check involved. It may be the cost of doing it through your local police department. And again, that was something that came out through the community forums that we talked with, that they would continue to be responsible for doing their own criminal background checks at this point.
Great, thank you. Representative Van Orman, did you have another
question? Well, I was follow-up, Madam Chair, on what Representative Freeman was talking about, because my understanding, just, and I think you've just explained it, that I paid $3 a year because I have lived here forever, and so my cost for my criminal history was $3. Had I lived across the river in Washington, then I would have probably paid the 50, or actually my agency would have paid the 50, because I would have needed the FBI check. And that's the way it works in the child care division. Is that correct?
Chair Tomei, Representative Orman, that is the way it works for the child care division's criminal background check. The way this bill has been, I believe, I haven't gone through each amendment, but the intent of the amendments, my understanding is that each program would be responsible for deciding whether or not their volunteers or employees would have to go through an FBI multi-state check. So you would not automatically, it would be up to the agency that you're working with.
So follow up to be sure.
Follow up?
To be sure I understand. You're saying that we'd have the option, at the local level, we would have the option of whether we were going to do the police check or the FBI check.
Chair Tomei, Representative Van Orman, that's correct.
Thank you.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Two questions. The first question I have basically deals with, first of all, Heidi, appreciate this letter from Boys and Girls Club. I guess the main reason that these bills are being presented are basically to provide safety. I mean, if you put it in a nutshell, that's what it is. Okay, so then follow up with that, Madam Chair, is I'm not aware of any incidents here in Oregon that would link someone who is volunteering or working through the Boys and Girls Club right now that have been involved in an incident that would actually break down the integrity of that safety issue. Are you familiar with any?
Chair Tomei and Representative Olson, I am not. Other members at the table may be. I am not, and this issue wasn't driven out of a kind of a scare. It was driven out of seeking clarity between the programs that are out there, clearing up the definition of what is a licensed child care program and what is a youth development program. But as a result, it came out from citizens that there should be some level of oversight for people caring for children in a youth development setting. And the criminal history, the background check was one of those, as well as informing parents, because programs, we heard this over and over again, programs look like they're licensed. And we heard even in one school, you would have one program licensed and one program not. And parents didn't know the difference other than the cost was maybe $25 for the unlicensed program and $170 a month for a licensed program. And so it was a consumer information piece that the commission felt was an important priority. So it really driven out, this kind of came out of the community forum process, the grassroots process.
Okay, just follow up. Okay, so your community outreach, I mean, especially I'm interested in the town halls that you had.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me where you were where those were located at?
Okay.
How many people showed up? And, I mean, what was the population that you were talking to? That's what I'm interested in.
Great. Chair Tomei and Representative Olson, we held five forums, Pendleton, Medford, Portland, Salem, and Eugene. They ranged from 25 to 50 in attendance. And then we held an online survey that had, I believe 200 participants that weighed in on this issue after we held the town halls, because we knew what we were asking at that point very clearly. And then we held the additional sixth meeting with the Boys and Girls Club directors. had participation from child care providers from licensed programs. We had some parents, and we had participation from YMCA, several school-age sites, churches. Sam Skillen here in Salem, I was hoping he would be here today. He is runs several church youth programs and was very supportive of this and very helpful through the process as well. Does that answer your question?
Okay, that helps.
Thank you.
You know, and actually I do have one more question.
Follow up?
Thank you. You're so kind.
You bet I am.
Amen. Okay.
Sure.
What is the accountability mechanism? Can you describe that to me? Because I'm hearing, you know, Kathleen share here just now about the issue of, well, I'll just go to the local law enforcement agency and they'll decide what the option is for what my background investigation is going to be and how depth it will be. But then how does that work from that point to, let's say, the Boys and Girls Club? Mm-hmm. Who's going to hold them accountable that, in fact, they're doing that?
I'll defer.
Madam Chair and Representative Olson, the child care division would be responsible for the three things in statute, for looking at and enforcing the three things in statute, to see that they had a background check for their staff, to see that they were letting parents and the public know that they were not licensed, and to see that we maintained them on our database. They would not be licensed, so we will not have a set of rules and regulations. We will not go in there and do that kind of regulation. We will just, if we have an issue, look only at those three things. And we would not require that they be on our criminal history check, so we would just verify that they were doing criminal history checks.
Follow up.
Well, that does cause me to have one more question. So do you have a sufficient amount of FTE right now in order to provide that service?
I believe we do.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Van Orman.
Thank you. I would just like to say that if the division determined that somebody had a history and informed the program, it would seem to me that the program would not take any risk of hiring that person or having that person on site because of the liability issues that they would face if something happened on site. Is that a fair assumption?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions before we bring up other speakers? Thank you so much for coming with us to talk with us today about these two bills. And now we have Carolyn Besick and Randy Tucker.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Morning. Carolyn Besick, Executive Director, Oregon Mentors.
Go ahead.
I represent 85 mentoring programs throughout the state of Oregon. Those programs operate in over 400 locations and serve 30,000 youth. To be part of Oregon Mentors, programs must background check because our programs operate both at the school site and in the community. So that's sort of our gold standard is the federal FBI background check, but we accept other background checks as well for people to become mentors in the programs that I'm speaking about. I just want to say that I'm very much in favor of this bill. The conflict that happens in our little sphere is that sometimes someone will be background checked in their community-based mentoring program, and then they try to go to the school and participate, and they have to go through a second background check. Add to the fact that maybe they're a volunteer in their church or they're a coach, pretty soon you could have to do four background checks in 1 year. Not only does it waste people's time and they get aggravated and they might be less apt to volunteer, but
if
of course it also...
If I can just stop you, Carolyn, you're talking about specifically 2988, correct?
Yes,
that's
thank
the
you.
Clean box.
Yes,
bill.
Exactly.
I just want to clarify.
This would
thank
help
you.
That situation greatly because they could say, I'm in the clean box, therefore I can volunteer for your program. So it ends that kind of duplication of time and resources, and it begins a process of statewide coordination. Again, you can get a background check that's the highest level, and end up in one school system, and they might say, no, you still have to go through our background check. So we are hopeful that this is the first step in the process of starting to say, we're going to have one background check for all of these programs, and I would urge you to look at a higher standard for all programs, because at the end of the day, we don't want to have any incidents that we can point to of children being hurt. So thank you very much for your time, and that's all I have to say today.
Great. Thank you so much. We're going to call Kathleen back and ask Kathleen to explain the clean box to us.
Chair Tomei, members of the committee, and if I can't answer your questions, I'll call Kitty Lake to join me and provide additional answers. The concept of the clean box is, again, that individuals, as the last person testified, who may work or volunteer in a number of youth-serving settings could have the option of going through one background check that these various organizations would accept. The way the bill is proposed to be amended, that this background check would consist of a criminal background check, the LEDS, and the multi-state FBI. It is completely voluntary. An individual could then, if they chose to be in this clean box, they would pay the cost of the background check to the division. The division would conduct the criminal background check and the multi-state FBI check. and then this individual, assuming that they pass that, would be enrolled in the clean box, and that would be, and the way it's conceived of, is an online database that any organization could check, or they could provide that information to an organization that they were going to volunteer for. What the clean box does not include is child protective services background checks and a suitability determination. It is not at the level that of background checks that are conducted for child care providers that the division does for child care providers right now. And again, out of multi-agency discussions, that decision was made primarily based on cost. And it would there is a quite a large fiscal impact in requesting child welfare background checks and obtaining that information from the Department of Human Services. And then there is a cost to the division to review those records, determine they're the correct individual, and to conduct a suitability determination. And also then there would have it would involve what the basis for the suitability determination would be with the nexus to the job. There's a huge fiscal impact to that. So as a starting point for the voluntary or the clean box concept, the individual would be go through a criminal background check, including the FBI multi-state background check. We could keep the costs to the cost of the background check, the cost, minimal cost to the division, and again, if we were to add, if the child welfare background check were to be added to that, that would be another discussion that would involve quite a large fiscal impact.
Thank you. Representative Maurer.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Who's paying the bill?
The individual would pay the cost of the background check. Excuse me, Representative Chair Tomei and Representative Maurer. If the agency that they were volunteering for, working for, had a policy of paying for those, absolutely, then they would pay for it.
Follow up.
Thank you. Who has access to this database? Is it a free name search? How?
Chair Tomei, Representative Maurer, and if somebody has additional information, you can add to it. The way it was conceived of is that it would probably most likely be password protected, and the individual who would be volunteering or working for an organization, or those organizations could have access to that, or they would provide access to that so that they could check and see if they were in that background registry. It is possible, again, we hadn't worked out the fine points yet, that the individual would sign a waiver that their name would appear on this as having passed this background check, and that would be available to anyone who wanted to hire them or have them volunteer.
Hello?
No, Madam Chair. My comment this is really intriguing. As a as an employer outside of child care, it'd be really nice to be able to go to a system like this and have various levels of, I mean, in the military, we have security clearances, and there's various levels, and you know what people are.
Mm-hmm.
And so it certainly would save a lot of heartache as an employer to have a system like this, quote, the clean box, or the not clean box, I guess. Do you have a not clean box?
the wilderness.
Okay, we're going to move on. Randy. Thank you so much, Kathleen.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Randy Tucker. I'm Legislative Affairs Manager for Metro. And with me today is Katie Poole, one of our senior attorneys. As you may know, I believe I've talked to all of you. As you know, we Metro owns and operates the Oregon Zoo, and the zoo has summer camps and other programs where thousands of children are at the zoo every year, and many employees with direct and supervised access to children. So we've been working with the Child Care Division for the better part of a year trying to get access to a better tool for doing the background checks that we need to do in order to make sure those kids are safe. We're continuing to work with the Child Care Division on that, and we've talked to you about another bill that will probably be coming before you later, and we'll keep talking about that. But when we saw these bills, we thought, well, these seem to address our problem fairly effectively as well, so we signed up to support the bills. However, now we've seen the amendments, and our reasons for supporting the bill seem to have been stripped from the bills. It's hard to digest the amendments really quickly, but I'll let Katie address that in more with more specifics. I'll just stop in a second and leave it to Katie, but with one more comment. One thing we've learned as we've peeled back the layers of the onion on this very complicated matter of providing adequate background checks for employees with direct unsupervised access to children is that there are many programs that could use better tools, including ours, and obviously cost is a factor, and so we're encouraged that there's a more comprehensive look being taken. We just don't feel we've gotten there yet. So I'll leave it to Katie.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I came here from Metro
and
today.
Give us your name, please.
Oh, Kathleen Poole.
Thank you.
Katie Poole. I came here today on behalf of Metro to testify in support of the bills that were presented before we saw the amendments. Metro owns and operates the Oregon Zoo and enrolls in child care, youth development, and conservation internships more than 4,000 kids every year. We have been conducting criminal history checks on our employees and volunteers for a long time, and we're eager to continue doing so, but we have become aware of the deficiencies in the systems that we're allowed to use. The tools we have and the results that they produce are far from perfect. We want to improve our ability to safeguard those kids by having access to the criminal history registry and its procedures. As presented originally, these two bills would have allowed us to require our employees to register through the criminal history registry and to pass those standards before they had unsupervised direct access to children. As amended, they would no longer do so. My concern with the amendments that we haven't been fully able to digest is that they mandate inadequate criminal history checks, and they would create a false sense of security on the part of parents and employers who were doing an online commercial check or going through some other process, thinking that they were verifying the backgrounds of the employees, and they would not be doing so. We believe that it is appropriate for Oregon to mandate good criminal history screenings for the children for employees of youth development programs and child care programs. And we strongly encourage you to allow us to require our employees to be registered in the criminal history registry. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Kathleen. Any questions of either of these two witnesses?
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm a little bit confused as to what would stop you from doing a broader check than would be required under 2987 with the amendments.
The amendments would require, Representative Cowan, Chair Tomei, the amendments would require a criminal history check, but we don't have access to LEDs. And so we would have no access to the system that could tell us whether there was an actual criminal history. We do have access, at great expense, slowly, with fingerprints, to the FBI background check system, but it's a black box. So when we do send our employees through that system, we find out that they have a criminal history or not, according to certain, when we put in the crimes where they're looking for. But we don't see it. We don't know what it is. There's no evaluation. So our choices are to rule people out based on crimes or convictions that may have a bearing or could have a bearing on their employability, or to let people through who shouldn't be disqualified. We don't have access. We don't see the actual criminal history records. And frankly, that's in some ways a good thing. I don't think that it's appropriate for every child care center, every after-school program, even every, you know, Oregon Zoo, to be able to access FBI or LEDs records and go through people's criminal history. That should be done under restricted circumstances, but employees should be actually checked against real standards. And that's the objection to the clean box. The clean box would rule out, would send the word out that somebody has a criminal history, whether they had it had any relationship to child care at all. So there would be a great reluctance to hire someone for a job, even if they'd been convicted 10 years ago of a traffic offense or written a bad check. I don't think that kind of a screening would pass EEO, equal employment criteria. I would be very reluctant to rely on it.
We have Andrea Meyer also who wants to speak on this bill, so I think we're going to conclude this unless anybody has a quick question. Okay. Thank you. Did you have a quick response? Thank you so much.
Madam Chair, and
you may sit down.
Oh well, thank you. thank you again, and committee members. Rosetta Wongren, chair of the Oregon Commission for Child Care. I just wanted to go on record as saying that as the commission, we've been working with the child care division and are very supportive of the clean box concept. We see it as being a very efficient process, a way of starting to look at how we can get good background checks, and then those people will not have to go through multiple checks at multiple sites. So if they go through this process and they're in the clean box and then they want to volunteer at another site or work with the state agency somewhere else, you can see that they're in the clean box and they meet the requirements and they will not have to go through that and pay for it or, as you talked about, multiple sites. The other thing is that, I'll just leave it at that.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. We'll be having further hearings on this, so if you have anything more in the future, you're welcome to come and tell us.
Chair Tomei, members of the committee, Andrea Meyer, Legislative Director for the ACLU of Oregon. I've been working on and off on the fingerprint criminal history background check for 10 years, and I now feel fully confused by this session and all that is going on with all the various proposals. And I'm here, I think, to express some concern specifically about House Bill 2988. I have more questions than I do answers. And I think what this begs for is a larger examination of some of these very important issues. I'm certainly sympathetic to the idea that folks who are otherwise required to get criminal history checks after criminal history checks have a financial burden on everyone involved. And maybe there is some way to address that issue. But likewise, creating a clean box, as it's called, may be the right way to go, but I worry also about whether it has stigmatizing effects if you aren't in the clean box registry, but your criminal history is minimal. I worry about when I believe I heard Metro saying that they would then require their folks to join the criminal history registry and allowing only employment for those folks, and I may have understood, but if this starts morphing into, yeah, you need to join this when it says it's voluntary, we've got some problems that we may be creating. Likewise, as I think has already been discussed with previous folks, there are situations where people have a criminal history and the fitness test must take place, and it varies from position to position and criminal history to criminal history. And I just begin to worry in Oregon in terms of the need to balance having safe folks working with all the vulnerable populations as well as the non-vulnerable populations, having folks who are at least don't have a criminal history past that's inappropriate. At the same time, the need to provide employment for folks who've truly been reformed and who are doing the right thing and who want and need and should be fully employed being eliminated unnecessarily, that I would just urge this committee, as another lobbyist said to me, we need to look at this whole criminal history fingerprint background check issue again, which I'm loath to do, but feel the need more and more as this becomes piecemeal all session long on the expansions and the changes to fix the problems that arise. So I guess I'm asking you to consider not moving forward with these particular issues, but instead maybe Representative Cameron wants to join the fray again, but that we begin to look at these larger issues that are arising in a time where we can really make sure we're not having, for lack of a better word, those unintended consequences that may happen when we're dealing with some rather delicate issues. So with that, I'll be happy to answer Representative Olson's question.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Andrea, you and I have had this discussion before about the LEDS, Law Enforcement Data System, and NCIC certification and access to different programs. What's your thoughts on the access to this database?
Chair Tomei, Representative Olson, you know, I remain concerned about who has access and the auditing and oversight. I know not enough about it right now to be able to speak on whether that is the best system available. I will, if I've not said to this committee before, but others, remind folks that originally when it was teachers licensing through TSPC and Department of Education employees, janitors, school bus drivers, it was purposely done that the local folks did not get the criminal history reports. It goes to the agency with the idea that there needs to be some protection so that criminal history information is not filtering down in small communities and being unintentionally released or someone talked about. So that comes back to a little bit of who has access to LEDS, who's using it, what are the training, what are the safeguards, how many folks, is this registry an online database that you have password protected but every individual has it and it's available to anyone who wants to hire them? I don't know the scope of this right now in terms of what I heard some testimony on this bill. But I think that's an issue that we need to look at as part of what is the appropriate next steps.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Andrea. And we're going to move on. And thank you all who came to testify today. It looks like we have a lot of questions that we need to have answered about both these bills, and we'll be working further on these. So now we're going to hear testimony on House Concurrent Resolution 8. And we have Mark Williams and Rosetta Kendrenigan. And if there's anybody else who wishes to testify on this resolution, please let us know. Thank you for coming again.
Chair Tomei and other committee members, it's with great sadness that I bring this to you today. Lynn was my vice chair on the Commission for Child Care for quite some time and was also, through that process, became a very good friend. And so that she has a face, I would just ask that you look at the back of your executive summary. This is a terrific picture that's representative of who Lynn was. I'm not going to read the testimony that's in my memo because you can read that, but I'd just like to say to you that From my perspective, Lynn was an extremely valuable member of the commission because of her expertise and experience of the work in her own community and being a tax consultant and having put together a child care site for her employees. It just showed the deep passion that she had for children and their well-being in Oregon. She just helped lead some very significant changes that the commission is working on and has worked on over the past few years. And it's a huge loss to all of us. And this is a very small thing that we can do to show her family how important she was and the work that she did. And I can't say anything more other than we all miss her greatly, and I was honored to go and speak at a memorial service and got a chance to meet her family. And one of the members is here today, and I think that he can do a much better job than I can.
Thank you.
Hi. Thank you. My name is Mark Williams. I'm one of Lynn England's five children, and I'm glad to be here today just to say a few things about my mother and her contributions to the state of Oregon. Lynn was a smart, vivacious, caring and energetic person, highly respected in her profession and her community here in Oregon. Besides running her accounting practice in Prineville, she gave generously of her abundant energy, expertise, and intelligence to help where help was needed. As a mother of five and a businesswoman who employed parents of young children, she had a deep understanding of the need and the practical logic of providing affordable, quality child care to all Oregonians who need it. Lynn's involvement in the Oregon Commission for Child Care required her to make numerous trips here to the Capitol, which we kids understood entailed a certain amount of risk during the winter. But despite the tragic outcome of her last trip in November, everyone she knew, and indeed all Oregonians, have reason to be glad that Lynn was the kind of person who disregarded this risk and countless other personal concerns to address issues she recognized as important with competence, diligence, and compassion. Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming, and our condolences to you and your family.
Thank you.
Any questions of anyone here? Okay, thank you so much for coming and bringing this to us today. With that, I'm going to close the public hearings on 2987, 2988, and HCR 8, and I would open up a work session. On HCR 8. All right.
Okay. So there doesn't have to be a fiscal, but we have to have a statement. And we don't have the statement saying there's no fiscal.
Okay. Anything else, colleagues?
You can roll that work session over to Wednesday if you want, and hopefully we will have that by then.
Let's do. We'll hold over the work session for HCR 8 to Wednesday, and hopefully we'll have the fiscal. Anything else for the good of the order? All right. We have some interesting bills in front of us, and we'll see what we can do to further their passage here in the House of Representatives. Thank you all for coming today and giving us some information. And we'll close the public hearing, or the House Committee on Human Services.